I want to be the best that I can be.
Rick interviewt Nederlandse topvolleybaltrainers in Volleybubble.
For a change, not a Dutch volleyball trainer, but a volleyball trainer that coached the Dutch volleyball team.
You know, I got nicknamed the laptop coach at one point while I was there.
Jamie Morrison talks about 3 years of coaching.
It's taken away and you miss it every single day. But
he looks back on the match against Italy and Turkey.
So I had to figure out why we couldn't pick up a tip.
So I saw your last message on Instagram about thanking the Dutch fans. And you call them the best in the world.
Yeah, I think it says it all. I'm really bad at social media. It might be the thing I'm worst at in life. So I've been trying to kind of catch up. And I think my last post was during European Championships. So obviously a lot has happened since then. So the first step was obviously leaving Holland. But I got to talk to the team. I got to talk to the administration at Novobo. But I never really got a chance to talk to the fans. So it was my way of saying thank you, but I don't think I've ever had a fan base that's been that passionate about it, but also that positive about the sport, about the team, and really a part of the team. And I think if you talk to any staff member, any player, they'll talk about how special it is to play in front of those fans and have them cheer them on and be a huge part of the success.
Do you miss them now, the fans and the Dutch team?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it becomes a big part of your life for 3 years. So that gets taken away and you miss it every single day. But I miss being in the gym. I miss being with that team. And I definitely miss that competitive environment with a band of, or a group of 10,000 people dressed in orange cheering you on. And then afterwards, 2,000 of those people sticking around to say hello and positive things and ask for an autograph. So, of course, I miss it.
You say they said hello. Do you also speak a little bit of Dutch now, or?
I was trying to learn, and one, it's a really difficult language. Two, there's way too many of you that speak English better than I do. So I felt like every time I tried to practice, someone would cut me off and just say, "Let's speak English." And then, my learning got cut short a little bit. So a little bit, but you have a very difficult language. I'll tell you that.
And any favorite volleyball words that you still know?
Volleyball words. No, I think lekker is still my favorite word on the planet. I think todziens is one of the best ways to say see ya. Volleyball words, no. Definitely little words are learned around the way, yes. I think it's a fun language in a lot of different ways also.
You've trained the Dutch national team for 3 years. What were your goals with the team?
Yeah, it was an interesting proposition when I took the team over because they were good. I mean, obviously, they finished fourth at the Olympics and they had a good run at Grand Prix. The pool at finals was a little diluted, but they finished with a bronze medal there. So, like, they weren't broken. There wasn't a ton that needed to be fixed. It's just they weren't good enough to be in the top three. So I think the first thing that my goal was to just make them more consistent. And I think that's what it takes to be your best. And I think you can go from being average to being good by going from, like, I don't know, 70% good to 90% good. And all of a sudden, you're kind of in the top 10 in the world. And then getting up to the top three, you got a little bit closer to 99. But those things you're working on are big things. So you're working on how to pass. You're working on how to generate force. And I don't know, how to hit angle instead of hitting the zone six every single time. So in order to get to good, you got these giant things that you can work on where you come into practice and we're going to work on this. And everyone leaves being like, that was amazing. I'm so much better. But to go from being good to great, it's about going from being 99% good to 99.1% good. And it's all these tiny, tiny little changes to try to make people more consistent. So I think that was my biggest goal, especially with the veterans, was I wasn't going to reinvent the wheel. They were pretty good. And I was going to learn a little bit from what they were doing and try to match our two styles. But it was really about trying to make our passing mechanics more repeatable. So again, it was getting it right 999,000 times out of a million as opposed to 99 out of 100. But that's what we needed to do in order to go out and compete with USA and Brazil and these teams that have traditionally been consistently good. So that was the first one. And then I think the second one was adding depth. When I took over the team, I thought we were an injury away from being average. And I didn't want that to happen. And then we lost Debbie. She stayed around for one tournament, but we lost Judith. And Quinta's introduction to me when I showed up to Holland was, hey, it's a pleasure to meet you. And I'm pregnant and leaving the team. And I'm like, well, it was nice getting to meet you, I guess. But so it was trying to kind of fill some of those holes of people that hadn't been there. But also I wanted to make sure there was depth in there, one, in case something happened. And a lot of stuff happened the first 2 years. I think we played 3 matches with everyone healthy. So, I mean, I don't know. I didn't see it coming, but I'm happy we did what we did in terms of trying to get some other people in there. But more importantly, I think teams are as good as their practice. And if you don't have 14 good volleyball players in your gym going at it every single day, you're not going to get better like this. You're just going to kind of stay average. And then maybe at match day when you're pushed, you're going to do this. But if you get two sides pushing each other every single day, your team gets better in a hurry. So I think the biggest thing, that was the two biggest things, was one, making sure that I add more consistency to the players. And again, it was small little tweaks and mechanics, adding a new little tool. How do you do that?
Yeah.
A lot of work. I think one of the hardest things, and again, I think going from good to great is the hardest step. And it's because you might have to come in for 5 straight days working on one little tiny thing to go again from 99% good to 99.1% good. So it was, I don't know, trying to simplify passing mechanics so arms are straight the whole time. It was trying to simplify block mechanics or maybe reading the game so that we're not taking one small false step to our right. When, especially playing a team like USA when they're running fast, that small step is what they're trying to get you to do so that you can't catch up to the speed over this direction. So blocking, it might be that. Attacking, it might be one bad decision. That one time you hit straight into the middle of the court where you get blocked, that might be okay when you're playing, I don't know, a Puerto Rico or Puerto Rico is probably a bad example. But when you're playing, a middle of a tier team, you might get away with that. But when you kind of get up into the elite, it comes down to 1 or 2 points. So it's about changing that one decision. I think that's how you do it. There's no magic fairy dust where I can say, hey, we sprinkled this on and all of a sudden we were more consistent. It's about making small changes to mechanics.
Well, I think one of your best qualities is you're able to look at the stats and do something with that, use them in your in your benefit.
Yeah, yes, I think people say that. I know I got nicknamed the laptop coach at one point while I was there. I use a laptop. But it wasn't the biggest thing. And I'm really not sure that things were that much different from what was happening before I got there. Obviously Gio and I knew each other fairly well. And, while I was at Vakif, I was sharing everything that I was doing. He was sharing everything that he was doing and we were kind of meshing these things together. So I think from a statistics standpoint, they were probably doing everything that he learned from me before I got there. Maybe I look at him a little bit more. I think for me, statistics are, they kind of point you in the direction that you need to go. So I think one, they're storytellers. If you just finished a match, you can look at a stat sheet and be like, all right, here's why we won. Here's why we lost. And then if you get enough information, they become predictors. But I kind of treat stats as breadcrumbs a little bit of just looking at my team over time and saying, hey, here's three areas where we can get the most value. And then once I have the breadcrumb, I'm going to go look at it with my eye and I'm going to say, all right, we're not a great blocking team right now, and go watch some video and at least points me in the right direction. And you watch video for 3 hours. And then after 3 hours, you come out and say, hey, we need to work on reading the game. Or we really need to work on our middle blockers, being able to make a fast move to their left or whatever it is. They point you in that direction. But I don't think stats are going to go out there and win volleyball matches. I think volleyball players go out there and win volleyball matches.
And how did you improve this? Did you use motor learning skills?
I've talked about this a lot in clinics, just when I went around and I talked a lot. Just again, I had that experience with Gio when I was at Vakif, and it was a really cool 2 years that I was there, just because we were taking these two different kind of mindsets of how to coach. One was the classic Italian way, and Italy's changed a lot under Davide Mazzante. And it was actually interesting. We played some friendlies with him, sitting down and talking to him, because him and I, in terms of motor learning, really kind of veered off on the same path. So, which was an interesting conversation, but the classic Italian style was just come in and get as many reps as you can. And easy reps is the way I'd word them, where you don't have to make a decision. You're just going to go out and dig this ball 100 times. And I come from a USA model where it's more, hey, let's try to make our practice as close to the game as possible. So that means a lot of 6-on-6. We're trying to initiate balls in ways that are going to happen in a game. And when I went to Vakif, it was this crazy kind of, all right, and we used to, Gio and I used to yell at each other, but like in a friend, we were best friends, but it would be like, no, this is right. No, this is right. No, this is right. And we'd stay up till 4 o'clock in the morning having these conversations. But what ended up happening was kind of taking these two styles and kind of blending them into kind of one thing. It kind of got to the point where we would have one practice during the day that was mostly 6-on-6. And we would try to find different ways and new ways to kind of initiate balls. So instead of throwing in a free ball, someone might attack a ball over the top of the block, and then the block would have to trans out of that. But trying to find little ways to get those situations where the players are having to react like they would in the game as much as possible. And then the morning practice, or usually the morning practice, sometimes we would flip it. It would be a little bit more like classic Italian style, but we would be trying to find ways to interject a game-like feeling to it. And the reason why we did that on the, I don't know, more blocked practice, if you want to go motor learning phrase, was just we can't have the athletes jump all day, every day, or they're going to break in half. So the goal was, and I did this in our practices, was try to jump maybe 180 times a day, 160 times a day. And then the other reps make them easier on the body, but I don't know if we're doing defensive reps instead of just hitting a ball off a box every single day. Maybe there's a attacker in zone 4 and an attacker in zone 2, and you're going to switch off back and forth. Or maybe if you have enough coaches in the gym or an extra player, you're going to throw a fake set in there. So they're having to read the setter. Okay, they're setting 4, then the person in 4 will hit. Or they're setting back and the person in 2 will hit. But trying to kind of, again, squeeze every last drop out of practice that we could.
Was that your secret? That you use block training and random training, like in a mix?
I think there's a place for both of them. And I think there's what's really interesting in the United States, because there's these polar opposites where it's like, no, we're going to do it this way. No, we're going to do it this way. I just think there's a place for both. And one of the things I talk a lot about when I'm talking to new coaches or young coaches, and I always get this question whenever I'm talking about random practice and block practice. They're like, well, I coach 12s. What should I do? And I think you need to bring the game back to the point in block practice where a player can do something, I don't know, 3 out of 4 times right. But they shouldn't be doing it 4 out of 4 times. It shouldn't be too easy. But you should find that kind of breaking point where, all right, hey, this is where you can do the motor skill that we're trying to do the right way. And then if they get really good at that level, you need to make it more difficult, and then more difficult, and then more difficult. So you would see this in our gym. If we were working on something new with somebody, I'd be like, all right, I'm going to toss you 3 balls. Go do it. And then we kind of work up to kind of, I don't know, 6-on-6. And if they didn't do it right in 6-on-6, we might go back to tossing the ball and be like, all right, here's some more chances. But I think you kind of need to float through that a little bit in the learning phase. So find out exactly where that athlete fits. It might be the age. It might be how new the skill is to that person. But really kind of get an idea of where they are within that. And then I think the other side of it is kind of like I was saying, is trying to squeeze as much as you can out of the day. So if I can get 100 reps in a more blocked way, it's still going to have some transfer to them playing good volleyball. And then the other interesting one was just, I was actually talking to Julio Velasco about this, because we were talking about the difference between men's and women's volleyball. And men's volleyball is all going to be random practice. They're going to come in there and play sixes for the day. There's really going to be very few reps off the box. He just brought up a point that just guys are naturally more confident. And when you're coaching guys, you almost have to chip away the ego more than you have to build it up. And he said with women, sometimes they just need to know that they can perform the skill. So there's another reason for block practice sometimes. So there'd be times before a big tournament where I'd be, all right, let's make this easy. Like, I'm going to give you a few reps to make you feel good about this. But it was another interesting comment that came up just when I was talking to Julio about it and asking his opinion on things. But there's a place for both. And I think as a coach, you kind of have to be the artist in blending the two and figuring out when and where and how to do those two things.
And what is your favorite exercise?
A volleyball match. Is that cheating?
No,
I don't think there's any substitute for actually playing in a volleyball match. I think you learn more lessons, and I think the feedback is real. Winning and losing is the best feedback that you can have. And I was watching if you guys want an interesting thing to watch on TV right now, because I know I'm watching a few things at the moment. There's a thing on Netflix called Explained, and they did one on the mind. And they talk about how our memories are stored in our brain and why certain memories are stored more strongly than others and what actually gets remembered. But they talk about the majority of our vivid memories centered around emotion, either positive or negative. And you're never going to simulate the emotion of a volleyball match. So I think when you lose a match and something goes wrong, that lesson sticks a lot more than it does in practice. So that's, I know, me cheating a little bit and saying 6-on-6 volleyball in a volleyball match, but favorite activity. Be curious what the players would say, actually. Usually it's some sort of 6-on-6. And I want to try to force moments where there's going to be some sort of pressure. So it might be, I don't know, we're playing with 5-ball, 4-3-ball sequence, let's say. And I guess, and I usually have a serve and pass because I think those are two of the most important skills in the game. And then maybe a trans ball and a high ball or something like that, because I think the game swings in high ball situations. So, and maybe I'm going to flip that and go like a trans ball, a high ball, and then a serve. And you get 2 points for a first ball side out, 1 point for a normal side out. You have to get 5 for a big point. I'm making this up as I go right now, but they're going to change every single day. But what I'm trying to do there is put a lot of pressure on that serve and pass. So hopefully the, I don't know, the receiving team gets to 4 points and that next one matters. And you get those juices flowing a little bit and you get a little jumpy. And I think you want to put your athletes in those situations as much as you can, and then have some sort of a focus within that. So. I think that would be probably my favorite.
If you look back at 2019 with the Dutch national team, was there a change in the trainings? Like did the level drop, or did you felt less emotion? Or
yeah, no. I mean, one, I'm not going to go too much into detail because I'm a big believer that what happens within a team stays within a team. Mm-hmm. So I don't think so. I think the entire year we were trying to kind of get this competitive edge in practice. And we talked a lot about what that kind of felt like, sounded like, looked like, and tried to get it every single day. And I think we were doing good at times and bad at times, but I'm really big on practices being competitive. I think it should be close to the match. I know it can't be exactly like it, but I think if you get, like I said, get 14 people that can play volleyball, especially if you're one of the best teams in the world, that should be one of the best competitive environments you're a part of. Is going at it every single day. So I think we're working hard to get to that point. Honestly, like, I'm not going to point fingers at things that happened. I think one of the things that was really difficult about that year was the schedule. I think you heard me talk about it at least probably 55 times throughout the year and before that. But what the FIVB was trying to do to these players was, I don't know, it was wrong. And we had all these matches that were kind of compressed into the season, and we had some bad losses that I think kind of hurt team morale, and they were really close to each other because of that schedule. There wasn't any time to heal. It was almost as if like you lost a parent, you were grieving, and then 5 days later you lost the other parent, and it's going to hurt a lot more than if you had like, I don't know, 10, 20 years to kind of grieve for a little bit and then get on to the next one. So I don't think that helped at all either. So I think it was just a combination of all of those things. And the girls were working hard. They were trying their best. And we had two matches where I don't feel like we put out our best performance, and that hurts.
Have you ever seen them back, like the game against Turkey? Did you watch it back?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched the TV version, but I did watch, I mean, immediately afterwards I watched it, just because, like I said, that schedule was kind of crazy. 6 days later, I think we were flying to Japan, so I had to figure out why we couldn't pick up a tip. I watched, I think, maybe that night, maybe the next day. I think maybe I was having some player meetings that night. You have to. And going back to, I don't know, my favorite bill is 6-on-6. You're going to learn the most from it. I think you learn more from the losses than you do from the wins. So that was my goal.
You said you were looking back. Are you like then streaming at your laptop, or what happened then with you?
Yeah, I think in that match, I might have been a little bit, just because I was really frustrated because we were trying to make some changes within the match, and we just couldn't execute it. So, and I don't think it came across on TV if people were watching, and maybe it did a little bit, but I don't know. My hat's off to the Turkish fans, because that was maybe the most hostile environment I've ever played in. And I think it affected us, and that's on me. I needed to make us a little bit tougher so we could withstand that a little bit. But like, it was really, really hostile. And I think it was loud. And then we went back to serve, and it got twice as loud. And it takes a lot to kind of make me go like, whoa. And at that moment, I was like, wow, this is crazy. So, and I think other teams maybe had a chance to see that before they went into it, because they'd been there for pool play and they knew what was coming. And that was their first match in Ankara playing in Turkey. So We didn't really know what we were walking into, but yeah, so my hat's off to them. So yeah, I was frustrated as I was watching. Just because, like I said, like we were trying to kind of change some things within the match, but we couldn't change them because I don't know if we were distracted by the crowd or if we were kind of on our heels, but that was frustrating.
In the preparations before the match against Italy, we had a special player with the team, a guy.
We had a player from Orion come in, Penn, and he was amazing and run a really good guy. But secondly, a really good imitation of Agano. We actually brought in a jersey with Agano on it at one point. He had it custom made. But so we were trying to imitate kind of what she was doing. But she obviously had a good match in that one. So
yeah, there was also one of the critics that maybe you were too focused on the play of the opponent. How do you feel about that?
I haven't heard that one. I don't think, actually, I don't agree with that. I think one, our players felt more comfortable knowing that they were prepared for what was coming. It was one of the requests that they had kind of throughout the 3 years, whereas I was a bigger believer in, hey, this is our team and we want to make the opponent adjust to us if we're good enough. So I was really big on spending a lot of time not perfecting, because we're never going to get perfection, but making sure that, like I said, we were becoming more consistent. So working on those technical things. And then as we got closer to tournaments, I wanted them to feel prepared because it was one of the things that they had asked for. So we'd start kind of mimicking what was going on. Looking back at the qualifier, the one thing I kind of look back on is, did we put too much pressure on that tournament? There's going to be pressure on it anyway. Did we kind of pick out the Italy match, and did I not bring that down into being something more normal, like I normally do? Maybe, but do I feel like we were spending too much time preparing for our opponent? No. I think of our practices, it was maybe 5%, 10% leading up to that tournament. Of the 3 years, it was 2%. And the majority of it was spent on how do we be the best volleyball team that we can be going into this. So yeah.
How do you describe your own training and coaching skills?
That's a broad question. How do I describe them? Yeah, I think if anything, first, I'm a teacher. I really want to maximize the learning that's going on, and not even the gym, but just the team that I'm a part of. So we were talking a lot about nutrition, about sleep, about how to be a better elite level athlete. And trying to give the athletes the information that they needed to go out and make good decisions. And then on the volleyball court, that means kind of what I was talking about, of really trying to kind of work our ways towards perfection. And we're never going to get there, but coming in every single day and squeezing every last drop out of our practice. So from a coaching standpoint, for me, that meant making sure that our practices were designed, that we were getting the most out of them. Of making sure that the behavior that was going on was the behaviors that we wanted to kind of exist within our team. So doing those things, and I'm not a yeller or a screamer, and I think people know that by now. I think people knew that about me. I don't think it's necessary all the time. And I think one of the interesting things kind of after, at least for the past, I don't know, 8 months or whatever, is I've had some time to kind of sit down and reflect on areas where I think I can be better and do better. And I think one of the things that I did was really kind of sit down and really cement, this is my coaching philosophy, and these are the behaviors that I believe in. And I can't remember who I was talking to, but they were talking about like culture and behaviors are like a penning in an animal, or like a, I don't know, sheep. It's basically going every 5 feet and putting a post in about what's important to you. So I really kind of sat down and said, hey, these are the 8 things that are important to me, that the next team that I coach, they're going to do this no matter what. And I think not really yelling or screaming, but demanding that those things happen is one of the things that I need to do a little bit better at. So I think that, I think if you were to talk to the players, I think I'm probably a technical coach. Like I said, I'm really big on trying to get athletes to be more consistent. I really, 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 really want a competitive environment. I want our players going at it. And Mark DeHaan was our team manager, but he was also our referee during practice. The guy's a saint because the girls would be yelling and screaming at him sometimes, but I think if you're going to have a competitive environment, like they're going to get upset at a bad call or a call. It might not have been bad. Mark, if you're listening, they weren't bad calls. Most of them were good. But just if they don't agree with the call, like, yeah, they probably should be arguing in practice if they're really going to be competitive, because that's what they're going to do in a volleyball match. So I think I'm trying to push people to kind of get to that level of competitiveness. So I'll let some things go in our gym. I think one of the things that was interesting going from being an assistant coach to a head coach is just when you're being an assistant coach, you're kind of in charge, at least the way the national team was. Maybe you're in charge of four athletes or five athletes or a phase of the game. I was in charge of our block and defense, really working with our middle blockers. I think you get really good at doing that. But when you become a head coach, all of a sudden you're managing the staff around you too. So I was really big on trying to bring in good people and give them direction and let them work. So I think if you talk to the staff, it was a lot about that of, hey, like, you have some freedom to do your job. Just keep me informed on what you're doing and make sure it's good. So yeah, I think that's that. And I think during the match, I know I've heard commentators talk about it, or at least Kim, my girlfriend's told me that it happens, but I'm really big on overloading athletes. I want them to go out there and have a free mind to go compete. So, I try to keep things to kind of the three most important things that are going to affect the match when it comes to timeouts. And really kind of trying to, hey, these are the three changes that we need to make in order to do this better. Even if we're up, hey, let's not just worry about winning by 2 or 3 points. Let's win by 6 or 7.
And is it always three things that you say in a timeout?
Normally, and I think it just depends where you're coaching and how much time you have in timeouts. But if you have a minute and you're a head coach and you have assistant coach, I would recommend your team go off and do their thing for about 15 seconds. And I was really big on, hey, quickly from my assistants, what's the one thing you need? So I split our staff up the same way. So we had one coach kind of in charge of our block and defense. And then that was Ale. Marco was in charge of our receivers, especially, and then keeping an eye on an offense. And I was really like thinking about our offense. So you'd get together for, I think maybe timeouts were shorter, so it'd be 10 seconds. And we kind of had a pre-program, like, hey, we're going to come together. We need to keep it to 8 words. What's important, and then we'll go talk to the team. So those things would change a lot. Sometimes it was an emotional thing. Sometimes it was, hey, it doesn't seem like we're here. It doesn't seem like we're focused. We kind of need to take a step back or take a breath and calm down. Sometimes it would be tactical in terms of, hey, like we were talking about blocking line on this hitter, and we've left the line open 5 times in a row. Overrun it next time and make sure you shut it down. Sometimes it would be offensive. It would be kind of, hey, this shot's really open, or hey, we talked about the tip being open here, or I'm trying to think of other examples, stuff within there, or hey, like serving targets, like, hey, we really need to go after this person. We talked about it, or hey, we fit the libero 6 times. So it would bounce around from thing to thing, and it would just kind of depend on where we were and how my feeling was with the team. And I believe in that. Like, I really believe in kind of keeping it short, sweet, make sure we get to the point. Like, these are the things that need to happen. So I think as coaches, sometimes we get very wordy, and normally we would say the most important thing first and then fill it with, I don't know, 45 seconds of me feeling like I need to talk. And then by the time I get to the end, the players forgot the most important thing. So, I'm really big on, hey, here's the three things, go do them. Here's three more things, go do them. But I think people in Holland need to have a little bit more passion for coaching. It's not something where you're going to get rich off of, and I'm coaching at higher levels and I'm still not getting rich off of this. I mean, I'm enough to make a living and enjoy myself, but, I guarantee you, Bill Gates is making more money as the owner and the stock owner of Microsoft right now than I will ever coaching volleyball. So this is about passion. It's about giving back to kids and doing what you love to do. So, even if it's a second job, it should be something where, hey, like, I want to get better. I want to improve. I want to go to clinics. I was trying to get my hands on as many coaches as I could have in my program that wanted to be like that. So we made the gym open. I found Eric Reitzman, who's now at Stuttgart and doing a great job. But the reason why I brought him in was just he wanted to learn. He wanted to get better. Every single time we took a break, he was reading a book on something coaching related. But that's what it takes to be great, either from a playing standpoint or a coaching standpoint. So I'm still there to try to encourage that. So if I were to give coach 3 tips, it's a deep question. I would say one is just be a teacher first. Understand that your goal is to make people better. And that means that, one, you need to get better and kind of understand the best way to kind of squeeze as much as you can out of people as possible. Understand how teams operate most effectively. I think one of the things that makes volleyball special is the fact that it's six people out there, but no one can do it on their own. It's probably one of the best team sports out there. It takes a pass, it takes a set, it takes an attack to go get a kill. And it takes a block and defense to kind of defend on what's going on. And it takes two blockers to work coordinatedly to go do these things. So there's a lot of dynamics go on, but just understanding how things work behind the scenes too. Just the idea that conflict isn't always a bad thing. If it's done right, it's actually the best way to have a team. But really kind of understand kind of those dynamics that operate behind the scenes. And then I think know how to motivate. And I think each team is going to be different in terms of each culture is going to be different. I think it's one of the things that I've learned as I've gone across from working in the USA, working in Holland, working in Turkey. It's just the way that you're going to motivate is going to be different. But just kind of understanding how to light a fire when you need to light a fire and do those things. So those are broad, but you only gave me three things. So apologies.
And how do you improve yourself? How do you learn?
Find holes. So I think self-reflection is important. I think at the end of every season, you should sit down and kind of really write down the things that you could have done better, the things that you want to do better next year. And then I don't know, find something you're not great at. So personally, like I got down and obviously I had some free time. So I wanted to get kind of, I don't know, a different spoke on my wheel of coaching. So I actually took I think it was $1,000 or something like that, certification in nutrition coaching. Just because it's a big piece of working with elite level athletes and making sure that they're at their prime athletic abilities. As you look into it, that nutrition piece is more and more important. And I knew something about it, but I didn't know everything about it. So if you want to go out and do something, there's a course called Precision Nutrition. I think it's just a constant hunger to improve. I think having mentors is really, really important. So I still talk to Hugh McCutcheon once or twice a month, probably, maybe once or twice a week at times. But he's kind of the guy that I go to ask questions, and I usually go out there and visit. I think if you have an off season, and you're a volleyball coach that's doing it full time, it's about visiting other programs. Kind of find people that you can go, visit, make sure that you're learning as much as you can while you're there. If you're a new coach, you'll probably come home with 20 pages of notes. If you've been coaching for 45 years, hopefully you come home with one thing. But making sure that you take something from all of those experiences.
You do some self-reflection. What kind of questions do you ask yourself then?
I think there's two ways I'll go with this. One, I think when you're doing it at the end of the year, it's what did I do well? What do I need to do better next year? And I think you want to do this as a staff too. And I think, like I said, that staff piece is important. And I really, really miss the staff that kind of we had there, just because by the end of it, we were all able to be completely honest with each other and say, hey, what you did wasn't good enough. And that's me going to them and them coming to me. But I think you really want to sit down and ask those two questions and learn from it. And it's not an accusational thing. It's not anything. It's just, hey, we didn't do this well enough. The next time the situation comes up, we're going to do it this way. And you're getting systems in place that kind of repeat themselves as time go on. And then individually as a coach, I think it's sit down and think about what you could have done better. Maybe it's within a match. Maybe it's the conversations that you had within a season. But kind of really kind of sit down and look at those things. And then I think as a coach, you're constantly going to evolve, you're going to grow. So hey, what do I want to keep doing that we did this year? It could be something with practice. It could be something that we did culturally. It could be something that we did tactically, whatever it is. Just, hey, this really worked. I want to make sure I hold on to this. So journal it, write it down, make it part of a program manual, something, just because the human brain will forget those things as time goes on. So as early as you can, as freshly as you can after the season, really sit down and make sure you document the changes that you want to make or the things that you want to keep the same. And then I think, like, I didn't grow up wanting to be a volleyball coach. I didn't see it being, I was going to go against my passion thing a little bit, but a profession, just because I didn't have an elite level playing career that I could go off and make money doing. Like, I thought I was going to have to go into business and do this on the side. I loved volleyball. I knew I would always be a part of it, but I didn't see myself being a full-time volleyball coach. And I kind of got roped into it, going to another college. And then I got offered a job with the national team because I was really good at using data volley. And then while I was there, I learned from the coaches that were there. But whenever I look back and I reflect on kind of why I got good at everything, whatever it be data volley or coaching or everything that I've done, it's just whatever I'm doing, I want to be the best at it. And it's a fault sometimes, because there's times where, especially as a head coach, you need to delegate things to other people. And I'm like, well, if I delegate that to you, then I can't be the best at it. Like, so it's been a fault at times, but I think just whenever I go off to other gyms and I'm watching other coaches, like, I'm like, oh, he's better than that at me. It's like, not anymore. Like, I'm taking that, I'm going to be better at him than that next year. So I think part of that learning process of going out and seeing what other people are doing in other sports, other teams, for me, it was a little bit of a competitive thing too. Like, hey, I want to be better than this person. And it might take 20 years, but give me enough time and I'm going to catch up to him.
Is it like the sentence, the phrase that summarizes it all, that you want to be the best?
Yeah, 100%. And it's not a egotistical thing. It's not anything. It's just, I really enjoy the mastery process. Like, I enjoy just diving into something 100%, whether it be, I don't know, like, nutrition has kind of been my kick lately. So I spent an hour today researching, like, what the best forms of fiber were and what the best oils were to cook with. Like, but I'll just dive down any rabbit hole that I can, just because, like, I want to understand everything that I'm being a part of. So there's this competitive piece to it. And then there's this also, for me, just this mastery piece of it. Like, I love learning new things and I love getting as good as I can at them. So for me, it's always, like I said, nutrition was the thing that I kind of wanted to dive into, but it was something new and exciting that, I don't know, I was really uncomfortable with at first, but now I feel like I have a pretty good handle on in terms of what to do with myself, probably most importantly, but how to work with athletes and kind of ingrain some positive habits in that phase of what they're doing also. So yeah, I think being the best is kind of boiling it down to its essence, but it's not necessarily this, like, I need to beat everyone in the world. It's just, I want to be the best that I can be.